The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Mr. Constitution Hour with Douglas B. Gibbs, a broadcast that examines our ever-changing world through the lens of the United States Constitution. Douglas B. Gibbs is on the air.
Hi, everybody. Douglas B. Gibbs here. Mr. Constitution Hour here on KPRZ. Great to have you. Appreciate you spending time listening to this program. And we've got to spend some time talking about the Constitution, the founding of this country, and Christianity. Now, we have spent the last few months going through the whole Constitution. We went through it line by line. Every line explained, bit by bit, piece by piece. That's what we did. And I'm glad to have done it with you. And we will go through the Constitution again. We're also going to go through the Declaration of Independence in the near future. But right now, I want to spend a little time about, you know, talking about the importance of, as Christians, being involved. One of the things I believe is wrong with our system right now is the fact that the churches have been silent. The pastors have had the separation of church and state attitude. They're afraid to say anything, do anything, you know. And it's this nonprofit thing. There, you know, you don't want to offend anybody because there might be less money in the plate. You know, for how many pieces of silver are you going to sell out God's law? And this has been the plan. The church has been eliminated from the picture, and they're trying to eliminate the church even more, because getting back to the republic, keeping the Constitution in line, keeping the Constitution, well, for the most part, in play, and our republic in play, restoring it now, because I feel like it's gone. I think that's up to Christians. The Christians are the ones that are going to be able to move this system back in the direction it's supposed to go. And if we do that, if that is the case, then it's going to be, you know, in order to do that, should I say, it's going to be the pastors and us Christians that have to take the lead. We have to do something about it. Let me back up. I guess I'm saying that kind of in a general manner. Let's do it this way. Charles Finney, famous pastor, the church must take right ground in regard to politics. Politics are part of a religion in a country as this. And Christians must do their duty to their country as a part of their duty to God. God will bless or curse this nation according to the course Christians take in politics. You know, and that's an important thing. I've always believed that the church has to take the lead. The founding fathers were Christians. We've talked about that during our time going through the Constitution here on KPRZ. And the founding fathers understood that, you know, having the Creator as the keystone at the foundation, that's the only way liberty can really stand against evil. And now, you know, and I've always told people that not only do I believe that God was heavily involved with the founding of this country, the writing of the Constitution, blessing the founding fathers, they prayed to him. It was once they began to pray during the convention that the miracle happened, and that was based on the recommendation by Benjamin Franklin after 4 or 5 weeks of just getting nothing done, arguing over pretty much everything. Benjamin Franklin, the elder statesman of the room, 81-year-old Benjamin Franklin, you know, takes off his spectacles, and he says, gentlemen, we have forgotten something. We were on our knees in prayer during the Revolution. Have we forgotten our powerful friend during this most important moment in history, this integral moment in history? If he knows every sparrow that falls to the ground, surely he is involved in the affairs of men and the creation of empires. And then he recommended they pray before each session. He called God the Father of Lights. And that is actually a biblical reference. You know, it's funny because I hear all the time Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin were deists. Well, if they were, they weren't very good deists. They used scripture all of the time. And, you know, I've studied the Constitution. I know the Christian connection. I know that they prayed before each session of the of the Constitutional Convention. They didn't do it in the way they had originally expected. They had actually put it up for a vote on whether or not they would pray to hire a clergyman. They didn't have the money. They didn't want prying eyes to know what was going on. And so they actually voted down the proposal when it was first moved, that they have prayer before each session. But the ones who wanted to pray, they decided, you know, okay, fine, we won't hire a pastor. We won't do it here in the chamber. We're going to go down the street to the nearest church. I was, in their case, it was a Reformed Calvinist church. And they chose their a local pastor that had served with them in the American Revolution, Roger Williams. And he gave them their initial prayer, and they made it a point to pray before each session. And then once again, that's when the miracle happened. But as a constitutionalist and knowing all of that, it's always been problematic for me that we have those out there that, they get on to me and say, well, Doug, you're too Christian. This is too Christian of a presentation. The founding fathers were all Christian. It's a Christian foundation, first of all. Second of all, knowing what I know, this is not just something I do. This is not just some job or some hobby. This is my ministry. When I was in high school, I thought I was going to be a pastor or a lawyer, maybe a stenographer. Those were kind of things I was leaning towards. And, I just took a different path. I wound up getting married very young, having a couple of wonderful children. I've been married 38 years, coming up this August, and it just took a different path. So I didn't get my ministry. God still gave me a ministry, the Constitution, and that's my ministry now. I knew this ministry would eventually become something because the Lord gave it to me. And, you know, I've always believed, knowing what I know, if I didn't share it, it'd be the sin of omission. I mean, we can go to James chapter 4, verse 17. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. Sin of omission. So, you know, knowing what I know and having the faith that I have and the belief I have and the founding father, you know, knowing all I know about the founding fathers, we understand then that the framers were Christians, and I got to share that information. And I'm going to do that. Now, that said, we must also understand that there are going to be those that stand against us. There are going to be those that fight against us because they want the tyranny, or they've been fooled into believing that. They've been misled. You know, it's funny. There's a book called The Stand by Stephen King. Miniseries was done. I haven't seen the new one, but the original one was a television miniseries with Gary Sinise in it and Molly Ringwald. And the character that played Harold was one of the early bad guys, and he's just, you know, and it was selfish reasons, partly, you know, pride, just a bunch of different things. But he was being influenced. He didn't know it. He was being influenced spiritually. And in the movie at one point, and in the book, he crashes his bike, motorcycle, breaks his leg, and he's laying there. And the guy that, you know, that was with him leaves him a gun with bullet, you know, so that he, you know, if he doesn't get saved or he can't, you know, heal or whatever, he knows what to do. And so eventually Harold does use that bullet in the gun, and he puts an end to his own life, but he writes a note and leaves it on his jacket first, and he says, "I'm sorry, I was misled." And, you know, I believe that a lot of these people who don't necessarily believe in the Constitution, they're fighting against it, the hard left, if you may, those in this country that have fallen for the lie, I believe that they're just being misled. Sometimes it's just a matter of education, and that's what I do, and I'm hoping that people will pick up on it, you know. But that doesn't mean that we don't resist, you know, when the evil has come. And some of those people, it's just downright evil. Some of it, you know, I believe that what's behind it all is Satan. I believe that tyranny is of Satan. I mean, it's either of God or it's not. And if it's not of God, there's only one other source that it can be from. John Adams said, "Resistance to sudden violence for the preservation not only of my person, my limbs, and life, but of my property is an indisputable right of nature, which I never surrendered to the public by the compact of society, and which perhaps I could not surrender if I would. The maxims of the law and the precepts of Christianity are precisely coincident in relation to this subject. James Wilson, Pennsylvania, signer of the Constitution, he also, by the way, has a great quote about abortion, that the earliest stirrings in the womb is life and it needs to be protected. But James Wilson, he said, the great natural law of self-preservation cannot be repealed or superseded or suspended by any human institution. The right of the citizens to bear arms, now we're talking about defending ourselves and defending our liberty here. The right of the citizens to bear arms in the defense of themselves shall not be questioned. Every man's house is deemed by the law to be his castle, and the law invests him with a power and places on him the duty of the commanding officer of his house. Every man's house is his castle, and if anyone be robbed in it, it shall be esteemed his own default and negligence. And someone might say to me, well, gosh, Doug, that doesn't sound like standing up against, tyranny and aggression in your government. That sounds like, individual, protection. You got to protect your individual. Okay, fine. Let's go to James Otis, the grandfather of the revolution. He had, back in, I think it was 1763, right around there, has stood up against the writs of assistance. Writs of assistance are a general warrant that the British were using, where they could just, hey, we think that you've got contraband, that you're only supposed to be buying British products. If you have non-British products in your house, you're going to pay a fine or you're arrested or whatever. And the general warrant allowed them to arbitrarily just search any home, anywhere, anytime, any way they wanted. And James Otis, he had been like a governor of a region. He rescinded his, he let go of his position. He resigned from his position, decided he didn't want to be governor anymore, and then in court gave a speech about how the writs of assistance were tyranny and so on and so forth. And the reason why he's considered the grandfather of the revolution is because he began making these shouts of resistance before the revolution really got going, before the Boston Tea Party and all that. But when he was in court saying what he was saying, there was a 25-year-old John Adams in the audience, and other founders ultimately that would be a part of the revolution, but John Adams being the most significant, who would hear what James Otis had to say, and it would stir him to resistance, stir him to even action. And so James Otis, though, when it comes to standing up against others, here is what he had to say. I will to my dying day oppose with all the powers and faculties God has given me all such instruments of slavery and villainy as this writ of assistance is. This is from his speech in the court. It is the worst instrument of arbitrary power and is destructive of liberty and the fundamental principles of law. One of the most essential rights is the freedom of one's house. A man's house is his castle, but these writs totally annihilate this right. It is a power that places the liberty of every man in the hands of every petty officer, who may reign secure in his petty tyranny and spread more terror and desolation around him. Both reason and the Constitution are against such writs. So that's the speech that got John Adams going. And John Adams would later on recall that speech and say this about it. American independence was then and there born. Every man in the crowded audience went away, as I did, ready to take arms against writs of assistance. Then and there was the first scene of the first act of opposition to the arbitrary claims of Great Britain. The child independence was born. In 15 years, namely in 1776, he grew up to manhood and declared himself free. So that, there you go. Now, let's wrap that part of this discussion up, or that conversation up, with Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 10 and 11. When you make a loan of any kind to your neighbor, do not go into their house to get what is offered to you as a pledge. Stay outside and let the neighbor to whom you are making the loan bring the pledge out to you. This is something that, in other words, they were breaking Deuteronomy by going into our houses with writs of assistance with these general warrants. Here's a question. So you have surveillance cameras in the streets, surveillance on your phone, maybe in your home? Is that any different? Is it any different what they're doing today than what the British troops were doing? Let me ask you this. Have you ever read the Declaration of Independence, gone through the list of grievances? That list of grievances sounds awfully familiar because we're going through them today, in today's society. What we have learned by just living and paying attention is that the federal government has gone from a system that was supposed to handle the business of the union and in turn secure liberty, but instead now over the years, over two plus centuries, the federal government has become the very King George that we fought against to gain our liberty in the first place. Now, I understand that what we live in, the times we live in, are not the same as the Founding Fathers. And from a Christian perspective, you know, there are biblical issues going on, prophecy. We, you know, feel like we're in the end times. You know, there's only so much we can do, so on and so forth. And I suppose you could even say that. And, you know, 1 Chronicles chapter 12, verse 32, of the sons of Issachar, who had understanding of the times to know what Israel might to do. Their chiefs were 200, and all their brethren were at their command. In other words, we need to be ready regardless of the times, though. We need to be warriors, Christian warriors, warriors for freedom, whatever you want to call it, because we know the truth. When you envelop yourself with the genuine article, as I like to talk about, then you are able to recognize tyranny. What I mean by that is this. I used to work for a credit union years ago, and I handled so much money that I could recognize what was not the genuine article, counterfeits, just by, you know, touch. And when that, and the way to understand your body, to understand how to do that, you must immerse yourself in the genuine article. I would not have gotten to the point where I could recognize what was fake if I had been surrounded by fakes. I had to only be handling the genuine article so that when something that was not the genuine article came across my hands, I immediately knew it. Same thing as Christians. You know, we envelop ourselves and immerse ourselves in the Holy Spirit, in the love of Christ. And when something is not of Christ, when something is not right, we recognize it because we've immersed ourselves in the genuine article. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 10 through 12, they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. All for this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they all might be condemned or damned, as it says in the King James Version, who did not believe the truth. So we are going to be fooled because we're not going to be completely immersed in the genuine article, or at least some of us. And that's where, you know, false prophets, false church, when the church begins to believe things and that is of the world and is not completely immersed in Christ, then they will be easily fooled. And John 17:17 tells us to sanctify them by the truth. Your word is truth. We need to immerse ourselves in the truth. We need to immerse ourselves in the Savior. We need to completely immerse ourselves in what is right. If we do not, then we will fall for what is not true. John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So the truth is through Christ. We must immerse ourselves in that truth. Otherwise, we will be fooled. And there will be those fooled in our time. Revelations chapter 21, verse 8. But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. And we have these churches now throughout the United States that are falling for the Black Lives Matter garbage, the CRT, the critical race theory stuff, the rainbow pride, you know, homosexual, transgender and all that garbage. We've got, you know, some churches even are boastful. They have gay preachers and all that. And they are not turning, they are not being Christians in the culture. They're allowing the culture to control them. And defending the truth requires us to be strong, to understand what the truth is. If we don't take heed to what the truth is, we will be fooled. If we don't understand the truth, we will be fooled. It is important for us to be, like I said, fully immersed, or we will not recognize the counterfeits. And like I said, some of these churches, they are being fooled by the counterfeits. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 10 through 12, they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send them strong delusion, and they should believe the lie that they all might be condemned, damned, we who did not believe the truth. Once again, I went over that earlier. I want to remind you of that. You know, but for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, getting back to Revelation again, as for murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. That's what's going on, does it not? Bears repeating. All right, now, that all said, Benjamin Rush recognized patriotism is as much a virtue as justice. Once again, our system is immersed in truth. If we immerse ourselves in truth and we immerse ourselves in our Constitution, we will recognize they have the same basic guidelines. God is throughout the Constitution. The word God, G-O-D, may not be in the Constitution, but God is throughout the Constitution. Benjamin Rush again, it comprehends not only the love of our neighbors, but of millions of our fellow creatures, not only of the present, but of future generations. You know, in the preamble, it says that, you know, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and then it says, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. They were thinking of the future generations. Secure, keep in place, because you possess your rights. The blessings of liberty. Who gives blessings? God. What are the blessings of liberty? Your natural rights, natural law, natural rights, the rule of law. Secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves, lowercase o, and our posterity, capital P. They capitalized for emphasis. We know this because in a recently discovered Sherman's copy of the original draft of the Declaration of Independence, it shows that Roger Sherman had purposely erased the first letter of certain words and capitalized them. They were purposely capitalizing certain words, and they were doing it for emphasis, as was the practice of the time. And they did this in the preamble with the word posterity, those not yet born. Yeah, they did it for themselves. Yeah, they were trying to secure the blessings of liberty for themselves, but especially for that future generation. They signed it for you. All right, no greater love has any man than that he laid down his life for his friends. John 15:13. The founders were willing to put on the line the lives, fortunes, and sacred honor for you. The lives, fortunes, they were willing to die in the pursuit of liberty for their posterity, for you. Now, you'll notice on the Great Seal of the United States, and this is also on the back of your $1 bill, in Latin it says one world order. People say, well, see, that's where a bunch of Freemasons are. No. That's not where that came from. First of all, when it comes to Freemasonry, and I'm not going to get too much time into it because I plan to write a book about this to really explain it. As a friend of mine once said, the Freemasons are a society with a lot of secrets, but they are not a secret society. They have their secrets because of secret handshake, whatever, because that's what they do. But to trace the Freemasons back to in the conspiracy theory, that it wasn't not necessarily true. There were a break-off between two branches of Freemasonry in the early 1900s. We did see one particular leg go off in a really weird direction, but that does not mean that's what was going on way back when. Illuminati, all that stuff. While I'm not saying those things don't exist or didn't exist, evil that has always existed, and it typically was being pushed by certain families that go all the way back to the Roman Empire and, you know, ruling elite and all of that. But the truth is a little different than what the conspiracy theories are saying. I'm not saying that there isn't control. I'm not saying that, you know, people like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers weren't what a lot of people think they were. They were, but the story is slightly different. But that's for a different discussion, different time. Let's get back on the main path here. So my approach to studying the Constitution has been line by line, founding fathers, what they originally meant, using the original language, and making sure that God, the Creator, is that foundation. And when it comes to that, we must go back to what they had to say to understand that. Thomas Jefferson, on every question of construction, carry ourselves back to the time when the Constitution was adopted. Recollect the spirit manifested in the debates, and instead of trying what meaning may be squeezed out of the text or invented against it, conform to the probable one in which it was passed. James Madison, I entirely concur in the propriety of resorting to the sense in which the Constitution was accepted and ratified by the nation. In that sense alone, it is the legitimate Constitution. And if that be not the guide in expounding it, there can be no security for a consistent and stable Constitution for more than for a faithful exercise of its powers. James Madison also said what a metamorphosis would be produced in the code of law if all its ancient phraseology were to be taken in its modern sense. In other words, don't use modern sense on what was written. Go back to what they meant. James Wilson, the first governing maxim in the interpretation of a statute is to discover the meaning of those who made it. The first, and then finally Joseph Story, the first and fundamental rule in the interpretation of all documents is to construe them according to the sense of the terms and the intentions of the parties. In other words, originalism. In other words, well, let me back up. One of my favorite resources is the 1828 Webster's Dictionary. The 1828 Webster's Dictionary, Noah Webster, was put out, and Noah Webster said, hey, I want people better understand the Constitution. That's the reason for it. That was his reasoning. And so here we are. We've got this original intent. We have a dictionary with resources. We've got Vattel's Law of Nations. We have all these other resources. And instead, they interpret stuff to mean based on what they think it should today, to fit their narrative today. That's not the meaning of the Constitution. That is not what it was all about. All right, so let's pause there. I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue on. Are you enjoying this program on KBRAVE? Your journey to learning the Constitution is just beginning with Douglas V. Gibbs. There is so much more to encounter. DouglasVGibbs.com, PoliticalPistachio.com, videos. I've written 7 books. And there's another radio show in addition to this one on KPRAZE. So check out my journey. Follow what I do. Get on the email list of politicalpistachio.com and continue your quest to become constitutionally literate. That would be DouglasVGibbs.com, politicalpistachio.com. Learn more about the Constitution at those sites.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Tired of the lies? Come here for the truth. Douglas V. Gibbs.
The Constitution Association's website is at constitutionassociation.com. Constitution Association believes that the Constitution is the solution and the real hope for America. Be a hero in America's story. Make a difference. Protect, preserve, promote, restore the Constitution. Reclaim the Republic. Make America constitutional again. constitutionassociation.com. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. All right, welcome back to the Mr. Constitution Hour by Douglas V. Gibbs, and we're on KPRAZE every Saturday, 9 p.m., also on a whole list of podcast networks, of iHeartRadio, Odyssey, Audible, Spotify, did I say that? Yeah, a whole bunch of them, but I want to say something before we get back started here. Everything I do takes funding, and this radio show is brought to the audiences by you. I am going to be in Denver coming up real soon on July 2nd to speak. That trip being paid for by donors. I'm working with Utah for turning around the 17th Amendment. Them being the first shot across the bow, so to speak, regarding the 17th Amendment. That takes funding. It comes from donors. My classes only pay for so much. I do have 6 classes in 4 counties in Southern California, plus online classes. My book sales only pay for so much. So if you want to help out with the cause, if you want to participate, Venmo Douglas-Gibbs-3, Douglas Gibbs 3, the number 3, with a hyphen between Douglas and Gibbs and a hyphen between Gibson 3, or you can go to DouglasVGibbs.com or PoliticalPistachio.com and hit the donate button. We need your funding. Always moving forward, always working, always doing things. So if you can help, great. All right, let's get back now to where we were. Now, what the Founding Fathers were doing, remember I mentioned New World Order originally before I got into kind of the Freemason, Illuminati is going a little too far kind of discussion. And I'm going to write a book about that stuff, but let's really talk about that. What did they mean by New World Order if they did not mean what the conspiracy theorists think? Well, what they meant, because and you've seen the all-seeing eye also, right? The eye above the triangle there on the money. The all-seeing eye originally was meant to be God's eye, that God was overseeing everything, that God that God had his hand on this country. That's what that originally meant. As for a new world order, we are in the new world, and this new world system was creating something completely new for the rest of the world, and that the rest of the world could follow by emulating it, and it would become a new world order if our system of liberty spread across the globe. That was the attitude. We believe we have the seeds of liberty. We believe the world would want to follow suit. John Quincy Adams, at the Jubilee of the Constitution, the virtue which had been infused into the Constitution of the United States was no other than the concretion of those abstract principles which had been first proclaimed in the Declaration of Independence. This was the platform upon which the Constitution of the United States had been erected. Its virtues, its republican character, consisted in its conformity to the principles proclaimed in the Declaration of Independence, and as its administration was to depend upon the virtue, or in other words, of those principles proclaimed in the Declaration of Independence and embodied in the Constitution of the United States. John Quincy Adams. The system was a new system. The Declaration of Independence began it. The Declaration of Independence began that process. Constitution became the embodiment of it. Samuel Adams, before the formation of the Constitution, the Declaration was received and ratified by all the states in the Union and has never been disannulled. U.S. Supreme Court, the Constitution is but the body and the letter of which the former is the thought and spirit, and it is always safe to read the letter of the Constitution in the spirit of the Declaration of Independence. This is our revolution. It still exists. The Constitution continues that revolution, and it is for us to defend it. We are to stand by it. We are to stand up for it. George Washington, before I say George Washington, but the concrete foundation, what it takes to keep this thing going, is Christianity, our faith. We must be the defenders of it. As Christians, we must be in the public square. Don't fall for the separation of church and state stuff, or, well, you know, my pastor should only just be preaching to, you know, save, you know, people, but, you know, the politics stuff, you know, we're not supposed to get involved. Baloney. Our faith is what is that. That's the concrete foundation of this whole thing. All right, George Washington, of all the dispositions and habits which had lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness. The mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to respect and to cherish him. The foundation, the pillars of our system is our Christianity and our morality. You know, when, and the people of that time period knew that democracy was a danger. And during the 1820s, we started moving towards democracy thanks to the father of the Democratic Party, Andrew Jackson. And that's when Alexis de Tocqueville came to America. He had come here to study the penal system, but what he realized was America had been embracing democracy, and that's dangerous, and systems fall apart, but America had not yet. And he said, basically, with democracy in America, as long as we remained a moral people, the democracy wouldn't tear us apart, it wouldn't destroy us, but the moment we started losing our moral foundation, democracy, which is mob rule, would tear us apart. And that's what we're dealing with now, isn't it? Does that sound familiar? Now, when we look through all of this, we have to understand that it needs to be fought for. You look back in history, liberty is not a common thing. It's not the rule. It's the exception. liberty must be fought for. Being a subject to government, being under the thumb of government, that's the norm. It's easy to be to do what you're told. And, you know, the word citizen wasn't even being used anymore. I mean, it goes all the way back to Rome and Greece. But in Europe, I mean, people were subjects. In that time period, people were subjects to their government. Subjects serve their government. The founding father said, no, we're citizens. We're equal citizens. There's no nobility. There's no kings and queens and monarchy. No, we're all citizens, and we are the highest ranking position in our government. Citizen is the highest political office. And as a citizen, the government serves us. We are no longer subjects. We are citizens. James Madison, the real wonder is that the Constitutional Convention overcame so many difficulties, and to overcome them with so much agreement was as unprecedented as it was expected. It is impossible for the pious man not to recognize in it a finger of that almighty hand which was so frequently extended to us in the critical stages of the revolution. Our system being those of citizens, the consent to the governed, not of subjects. This is a godly thing. God's hand of providence was on this. Alexander Hamilton, for my own part, I sincerely esteem a system which, without the finger of God, never could have been suggested and agreed upon by such a diversity of interests. George Washington, as to my sentiments with respect to the new Constitution, it appears to me little short of a miracle. It demonstrates as visibly the finger of providence as any possible event in the course of human affairs can ever designate it. And then Thomas Jefferson, a wise and frugal government for which shall leave men free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government. Of course, you start taking from the mouths those food, and you start giving it to others who didn't work for it, it's not very long before that system starts to fall apart. And in fact, that's what they realized when it came to the Pilgrims. That's what they realized in Jamestown. They tried socialism and it didn't work. Oh, we're all Christians here. We can trust each other. You know, we'll just, you know, put everything in a big pile, and, you know, you take what you need and you put in there what you work for and all that, and we'll just, you know, we'll work together. Didn't work out too well. And Governor William Bradford, this is what he wrote about that. This had very good success for, and this is after they began to thrive and began exporting corn. It started with the, you know, free market system. For it made all hands very industrious, so as much more corn was planted than otherwise would have been by any means the governor or any other could use, and save him a great deal of trouble, and gave for better content. Now remember what's going on here. They began with socialism. They realized, hey, it wasn't working. But when they began to be more industrious with a free market, they had more than they needed, and they could send it to market, and it became a prosperous society. As for the consent of the governed I mentioned earlier, John Francis Mercer, a delegate to the Constitutional Convention, it is a great mistake to suppose that the paper we are to propose will govern the United States. It is the men whom it will bring into the government and interest in maintaining it that is to govern them. The paper will only mark out of the mode and the form. Men are the substance and must do the business. In other words, the Constitution is only ink and paper if we don't fight for it, if we don't apply it, if we don't put everything into it. If we want to uphold the Constitution, we have to be in charge. We have to make sure we apply it. We have to make sure that our leaders are engaged in our government. We're engaged in our government. They understand the original intent, all of that. All right, now, that all said, let's move on to really how we now start to restore this stuff. And one of the things I'm working on is, let's go back to the First Amendment. In the First Amendment, you have five rights that are listed there. You have religion, speech, the press, religion, speech, press, assembly, and petition. Petition to government for redress of grievances. And those are all things that we could be doing. We could pray about it, talk about it, write about it, gather about it, and petition would be take action. But really, what does it mean by petition the government for redress of grievances? Grievances, you know, like that list of the Declaration of Independence. What's wrong? So we want to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Why do we have to go make petitions based on their rules? Why can't we make our own petitions as citizens and they get thousands of signatures and send it to those knuckleheads, say, abide by our petition or we will take further action, either by voting you out of office or legal action? Why can't we do that? That's exactly what we're supposed to be doing. First Amendment petitions, citizen petitions. No rules, just as long as there's a citizen signing it. And, you know, whether or not you sign within the box doesn't matter. It's our petition. It is our petition. And one of the things that we need to do is we need to work together as communities to ensure that our government is following our lead. Clarence Thomas, U.S. Supreme Court Justice. As I have traveled across the country, I've been astounded just how many of our fellow citizens feel strongly about their constitutional rights, but have no idea what they are, or for that matter, what the Constitution says. I am not suggesting that they become constitutional scholars, whatever that means. I am suggesting, however, that if one feels strongly about his or her rights, it does make sense to know generally what the Constitution says about them. It is at least as easy to understand as a cell phone contract and vastly more important. So if we understand it, then what can we do? Well, if we understand it, that means we can put it into action. That means we can do these things like these contracts I'm talking about. Okay, so are we willing to do that, though? As American citizens, are we willing to stand up and say, hey, this is kind of important. We want to make sure that our system survives because we have the authority. We are, as citizens, we are the ones that are the highest in command. Well, this is the highest political office, is that a citizen. Matter of fact, here's what James Madison said. If Congress can employ money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take the care of religion into their own hands. They may appoint teachers in every state, county, and parish and pay them out of their public treasury. They may take into their law hands the education of children. Into their own hands, the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the Union. They may assume the provision of the poor. They may undertake the regulation of all roads other than post roads. In short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress. Were the power of Congress to be established in the latitude contended for, it would subvert the very foundations and transmute the very nature of limited government established by the people. In other words, what James Madison is saying there, and if I remember properly from his 1817 veto of a bonus bill, he's saying, hey, the federal government's job is not these things. It is not for the federal government to be paying for our roads, paying for, the education of our children, and so on and so forth, because then they will control it. It's none of their business. The federal government was created for the external issues. It is up to the states to handle the internal order of what goes on in the state. Alexander Hamilton, the welfare of the community of states is the only legitimate end for which money can be raised from the community. Congress can be considered as only under one restriction, which does not apply to other governments. They cannot rightfully apply the money they raise to any purpose merely and purely local. The Constitution test of a right application must always be whether it be for the purpose of general or local nature. In other words, if the general government, the federal government, raises money, it taxes, it can only be for general purposes, for the country, for trade with other countries, for common defense, things like that. The local issues belong to the local governments. We can go to, Federalist number 45 is one of my favorite things to quote to really help people understand what I mean by that. Federalist 40, paper number 45, James Madison wrote, the powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Those which are to remain in the state governments are numerous and indefinite. The former will be exercised principally on external objects as war, peace, and negotiation, and foreign commerce, with which the last the power of taxation will, for the most part, be connected. The powers reserved to the several states will extend to all the objects which, in the ordinary course of affairs, concern the lives, liberties, and properties of the people, and the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the state. The operations of the federal government will be most extensive and important in times of war and danger. Those of the state governments in times of peace and security. The federal government handles the external stuff and disputes between the states. The states handle their internal orders. How about James Madison again? But this is a totally different quote here. Consider for a moment the immeasurable difference between the Constitution, limited in its powers to the enumerated objects, and expounded as it would be by the import claim for the phraseology in question. The difference is equivalent to two constitutions of characters essentially contrasted with each other, the one possessing powers confined to certain specified cases, and others extended to all cases whatsoever. Can less be said than that it is impossible that such a constitution as the latter would have been recommended to the states by all the members of that body whose names were subscribed in the instrument? Is it credible that such a power would have been unnoticed and unopposed in the federal convention? In the state conventions, which contended for and proposed restrictive and explanatory amendments, and in the Congress in 1789, which recommended so many of these amendments, a power to impose unlimited taxes for unlimited purposes could never have escaped those public bodies. The Constitution is a limited one, possessing no power not actually given, and carrying in the face of it a distrust of power beyond the distrust indicated by the ordinary forms of free government. Madison wasn't messing around, man. He said it like it is. You don't have the authorities, federal government. If it's internal, if it's local, it's none of your business. The federal government was created to handle the external issues. And I remember I was doing a speech one time, and a woman raised her hand after the end and wanted to ask a question. She says, well, don't you want a government that takes care of its people? I said, no, I want a people that takes care of its people. It's not the federal government's job to take care of its people. It's the federal government's job to take care of the external issues. And when it takes care of the external issues, that enables the states to take care of the internal issues. John Dickinson, who signed the United States Constitution, said, nothing is more certain than the forms of liberty may be retained when the substance is gone. In government as well as in religion, the letter killeth and the spirit giveth life. So we have to go back to what was the spirit. Not what you think it says, what it was meant originally. John Witherspoon, shall we establish nothing good because we know it cannot be eternal? Shall we live without government because every constitution has its old age and its period? Because we know that we shall die, shall we take no pains to preserve or lengthen our life? Far from it, sir. It only requires the more watchful attention to settle government upon the best principles and in the wisest manner that it may last as long as the nature of things will permit. They wanted this system to last the test of time, and it has. Coming up in September of 2022, the Constitution will be 235 years old. No Constitution has lived that long. The average age of Constitutions in the world is 17 years. Think about that. Every couple decades, the government is upended and something new is put in place in most countries. Some might last a little longer, some shorter, but nothing like the American Constitution. John Hancock, in having secured the approval of our hearts by a faithful and unwearied discharge of our duty to our country, let us joyfully leave our concerns in the hands of Him who raises up and pulls down the empires and kingdoms of the world as He pleases. It is not for us, it is for the Lord, but we do need to defend it. John Jay, all that the best men can do is to persevere in doing their duty to their country and leave the consequences to Him who made it their duty. In other words, put it in God's hands. But that doesn't mean that we don't do something. One of my favorite quotes is by Louis Gohmert, a representative in the House from Texas. And he said, putting things in God's hands does not mean leaning on the shovel and waiting for a hole to dig itself. We must do what we can to preserve the Constitution. And we must understand that it is ours to maintain. It is ours to keep. To God and posterity, you are accountable for your rights and your rulers. Let not your children have reason to curse you for giving up those rights and prostrating those institutions which our fathers delivered to you as a sacred palladium. Palladium, I'm sorry, and which by the blessing of God have been peculiarly beneficial to the order, peace, and prosperity of this state. That was Reverend Matthias Burnett. And he delivered that to the new Connecticut government. In short, as Christians, this is a godly thing. This is not just a constitution, it's not just politics. It is up to us to make sure that our system remains pure, remains Christian, remains in place. John Adams, the interest of the people is one thing. It is the public interest. And where the public interest governs, it is a government of laws and not of men. The interest of a king or of a party is another thing. It is a private interest. And where private interest governs, it is a nation of men and not of laws. John Adams. Thomas Jefferson. I view great cities as pestilential to the morals, the health, and the liberties of man. One of the things that they understood was that tyranny rises out of population centers. And so what did they do? They created a system that would not allow the population centers to reign, that would allow the rural areas to have a voice. So let's wrap it up now with these things. I agree with you in your opinion of cities. Cowper, the poet, very happily expresses our ideas to them compared with the country. God made the country, man made cities. I consider them in the same light that I do abscesses on the human body as reservoirs of all the impurities of a community. And then finally, pure democracy cannot subsist long nor be carried far into the Department of State. It is very subject to caprice and the madness of popular rage. In other words, we can't allow the cities to take over and control. But isn't that what's happening as we become more of a democracy? That's exactly what's happening. We need to get back to being a republic. Being a republic means that the state legislatures were appointing the senators. They were involved in the ratification of treaties, involved with the budget. They were involved with the confirmation hearings, everything. The federal government could do nothing without oversight from the state legislatures. That's being a republic. Otherwise, we let the population centers control and throw us into tyranny. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week here on K-Praise. I am Mr. Constitution. This has been the Mr. Constitution Hour by Douglas V. Gibbs here on K-Praise. United we stand, combined we kick butt. God bless America, my friends. God bless you. See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.